science.
Antibiotic superbugs are a growing concern in the modern world. But could the humble, mysterious platypus hold the key to saving humanity from this threat? We're talking all things animal science today. Lyndall Byford is from the Australian Science Media Centre. She's here with us because there's a lot of science news to talk about. Welcome, Lyndall.
Thanks, Patricia.
Okay. Platypuses, platypi, let's not go there, have long fascinated scientists. Why?
Oh, look, platypuses, and I will say it's platypuses, I believe, are one of my favourite animals because they're just full of so many weird and wonderful features. I mean, they walk on their elbows like a crocodile. They have poisonous spurs. They have fur, but they have eggs like a bird. And they can even detect electricity with their bills. I mean, they are exceptionally cool.
How on earth might they be able to help with antibiotic superbugs, though? I mean, what's so special about platypus milk?
So platypus, unlike the rest of us, don't have teats or nipples to make their milk. So like hen's teeth, platypus nipples are pretty rare. Instead, they sort of leach milk onto their skin. So scientists at CSIRO think that might be one of the reasons why they have these really unique proteins in their milk that could help us fight superbugs. It's really because the milk is exposed to the environment when the babies consume it. So they really need to have some special stuff in there to stop it being contaminated by bacteria.
So tell me more about this Shirley Temple fold in the protein. What is that? How does that work?
Yeah, so we found these particular proteins in the milk a couple of years ago, but this week the scientists at CSIRO really worked out exactly how the shape and structure of these proteins are sort of put together. And what that tells us is really what's unique about this protein that might give it these particular antibiotic properties. And in this protein called monotreme lactation protein, they have found that it has an unusual 3D fold that causes a sort of ringlet-like shape, which they've nicknamed Shirley Temple.
Amazing. And how significant is this piece of research? I mean, put in broader perspective, how long before it can be useful in practice?
Look, we're a few years off yet. Like a lot of medical discoveries, it takes a while to actually get that into patients. But antibiotic resistance is a huge problem. The World Health Organization has said we really need urgent action to avoid slipping back into a sort of post-antibiotic era where common infections that we've been able to treat quite simply actually become fatal again. So while it's a few years off, we really need some urgent and large-scale action now to try and find these kind of new antibiotics.
Let's move to another topic. We have covered a lot of different pieces of research in Research Filter over the years, and quite a lot of it comes to be through testing on lab rats. How widespread is their use, Lyndall?
Pretty broad if you're talking about drugs. Before any new drug is tested on humans, it's pretty much always tested in animals. It's part of the regulatory requirements. And if you look at the Nobel Prizes for Medicine, for example, over the last 30 years, every one of them has relied on animal testing at some point. So we need it. But in Australia, the best estimates are that we use about one animal for every Australian every 8 years.
But there are ethical concerns there, aren't there? Some scientists are looking for ways around this process because there are so many ethical issues.
Absolutely. Scientists in Australia and around the world are increasingly operating under what's known as the three R's. So not reading, writing and arithmetic in this case, but reducing, replacing and refining, which really demands that as part of their research that they look for ways to not use animals. And that really brings us to this new paper, which has just been awarded the National Centre for Replacement, Refinement and Reduction in Animals in Research International Award in the UK.
That's very long. Do you think? Just got to call it out. Make them shorter, people.
I know, the three R's. They should just stick with that.
Just stick with it. Do you think there's enthusiasm for the idea within the scientific community?
Yeah. Look, I've never met a scientist that enjoys you know, working with animals and wouldn't prefer to find a better way. So absolutely, every scientist that works on animals would love to find a way to certainly use less.
Finally, many of the world's most threatened species of animal live in captivity. We know that. Often that's because they're part of breeding programs aimed specifically at saving their species. But how effective are those programs? Tell me about the latest research into this.
You look, for animals facing threats, captive breeding is often that kind of insurance agent against extinction. But in order for it to work, we have to know that these animals can breed and reproduce ideally as well as they do in the wild. And this research actually came out of our own study here in Australia looking at Tassie devils, which obviously are under great threat in the wild, and we need to be able to breed them in captivity to work. And scientists at the University of Sydney noticed that actually over the generations, the ability of these Tassie devils to breed in captivity was getting less and less. And they wanted to know, is this something that's specific for Tassie devils, or is this something that happens to all animals in captivity? And it turns out it's across the board.
How was the research actually conducted?
So this is one of those studies that's actually a study of studies. It's called a meta-analysis, that old gem.
Yeah.
And they go through the scientific literature and look for every study that they can find that involves captive breeding and really compare and contrast across the studies. So that allowed them to look at around 100 different species, elephants, giraffes, rhinos, gorillas, fish, banana prawns, you name it. It was part of this study.
Okay, so broader implications. What could the broader implications be for breeding programs and, I suppose, more broadly for conservation efforts?
Yeah, so the big thing they found was that animals born in the wild had a much higher chance of successfully reproducing when they were in captivity than the animals that were born in captivity. And the biggest impact was in aquaculture. So particularly for people who are trying to breed fish in captivity that maybe haven't been bred before, new sources of food, that thing. We really need to look at how we're doing it.
Lyndall Byford there. She's from the Australian Science Media Centre. It's news time now, but after the news, we're going to head to Russia.